Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone, Smoke Jensen, Mountain Man number 37, Savagery of the Mountain Man. Narrated by Dylan Lynch, with performances by James Lewis, Drew Copas, Elizabeth Jernigan, Richard Rowan, Johann Detweiler, David Coyne, Bradley Smith, Nanette Savard, Christopher Grayville, M.J. Casey, Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Thomas Keegan, Kimberly Gilbert, Alexander Strain, Joe Brack, Nick DePinto, Christopher Sheeran, Dylan Lynch, and Stephen Carpenter.
Los Brazos, New Mexico Territory. It had been over a month since Pearly left Sugarloaf. In that time, he had maintained a southern drift with no particular destination in mind. Only a need to continue to put distance and time between himself and the events that had led to Lucy being killed. During his six-week-long sojourn, he had stayed no longer in any one town than he needed to, sometimes taking a part-time job for a couple of days or so, just to earn enough money to keep going. Over the last month, he had worked in a livery, had loaded and unloaded freight wagons, and had even stood in for a week as a bartender. At one ranch, he had spent a day breaking horses, getting $5 for each horse he broke. Then, in the little town of Jasper, Colorado, he built down an extra room for a widow who earned her keep by making pies. The widow, whose name was Diane, suggested, both by word and action, that if Pearly wanted to stay on, she would more than welcome his company. But Pearly declined the offer as tactfully as he could.
That's all right, cowboy. If you ever get tired of seeing what's just over the next hill, you can always come back.
As Pearly rode off, he wondered if he made a mistake in not taking up the widow's offer. It wasn't as if he would have been cheating on Lucy, and the diversion might have helped in the healing process. But even as he considered that, he knew that it would not have been the right thing to do. Not for him, and not for Diane. After another week of riding, he happened across the little town of Los Brazos, which lay fly-blown and dying as it baked in the hot New Mexico sun. The first building he passed was a railroad depot, though there was no railroad serving the town. Feeling the need of a beer to cut the trail dust, Pearly dismounted in front of the Casa de la Suerte Cantina, which was the only saloon in the small town. The inside was more pleasant than the outside had promised, with a chandelier and a long, polished bar. The bartender was Mexican, and he stood at the far end of the bar, leaning back against the wall with his arms folded across his chest and a small piece of rawhide dangling from his lips.
A beer.
Hey! How come you serve that stranger and you don't serve me?
Because, Senor Dempster, already you are drunk, I think. And the more borracho, the drunker you get, the meaner you get. Besides, you lied to me when you said you didn't have to work today. Senor Ben had to make the run to Chama without you.
Since when is it any of your business whether or not I go to work?
It is none of my business if you do not go to work, but it is my business if I make Senor Montgomery enfadado. This is his place, and he could fire me.
He ain't gonna fire you for selling me another drink. Hell, that's what saloons do, ain't it? Sell drinks to their customers. What the hell are you looking at, you pie-faced weasel?
Mister, don't try to draw me into all this. I just stopped in here for a beer.
Yeah? Well, you finished it, so get.
Senor Dempster, to my customers like that, you cannot talk.
I'll talk to anyone any damn way I want. Dempster!
Turning toward the door of the saloon, Pearly saw a gray-haired, gray-bearded man, short, stocky, and angry.
What do you want?
Where were you when the stage left this morning?
There didn't nobody come to wake me up. If somebody had come to wake me up in time, I wouldn't have missed a stage.
It ain't nobody else's job to wake you up in the morning. If you hadn't been hungover, you would have been able to wake yourself up. And look at you. You're drunk now.
Come on, Ben. I ain't that drunk. I'll be at work tomorrow morning. Just you wait and see.
No, you won't be there tomorrow or any other day. You're fired.
You can't fire me. You're just a stagecoach driver.
I didn't fire you. I'm just telling you you're fired. Mr. Montgomery's the one who fired you.
Yeah? Well, who are you going to get the right shotgun with you?
We'll find somebody before the stage leaves.
You're the one that talked him into firing me, aren't you?
What if I am? You're supposed to be riding shotgun guard with me. You think I want a drunk sitting beside me?
Montgomery is going to have to find a new shotgun guard and a new driver, because I aim to shoot you right between the eyes.
Glancing toward the driver, Pearly saw that he wasn't armed. Looking back toward Dempster, he saw that the angry man was drawing his pistol. Acting instinctively, Pearly threw his beer mug at Dempster.
Damn, mister. I reckon you just saved my life.
I reckon I did.
Now I'm gonna have to find someone to ride shotgun with me tomorrow.
No, you won't.
What do you mean I won't?
You just found someone.
You?
Me.
All right. I tell you what. I'll tell Mr. Montgomery about you. You come on down to the depot before the stage leaves tomorrow, and you talk to him. If he's willing to hire you, it's fine with me.
What time's the stage leave?
It leaves at 8 in the morning.
I'll be there.
The next morning, Pearly went to the stagecoach depot. Inside, he saw a tall, silver-haired, dignified-looking man.
Are you Mr. Montgomery?
I am.
Mr. Montgomery, last night I met a fellow by the name of Ben. He suggested I come see you to ask about working as a shotgun guard.
Oh, yeah. Ben talked to me about you. You're the one called Pearly?
Yes, sir.
Ben said you laid old Dempster out with a beer mug. I sure wish I could have seen that.
At the time, it seemed the thing to do.
I don't think I ever met you. How long have you lived in Los Brazos?
I'll tell you that as soon as I find a place to live.
Well, that's a straight answer. Are you married?
No, I was married, but my wife died.
Oh, I'm real sorry to hear that, son. And don't get me wrong, but I have to ask this. Have you ever been in trouble with the law?
I'm not a wanted man.
You're not a wanted man?
No, sir, I'm not.
All right. I guess that's a pretty straight answer, too. And because you gave me a straight answer, I won't go any further into it. Ben told me you were in the saloon when he told Dempster that he was fired.
Yes, sir, I was.
Now, I don't reckon it was any mystery to you why we fired him. He is a drunk. Now, let me ask you this. What were you doing in the saloon? You aren't a drunk, are you?
I had a long ride, and for most of that ride, I was looking forward to a beer. When I rode into town last night, that was the first thing I did.
One beer?
One beer. Well, that is part of one beer. There was still some left when I threw it at Dempster.
All right. I reckon that's good enough for me. Tell me this. If I hire you, how soon can you go to work?
When does the coach leave?
In about 10 minutes.
If you hire me, I'll be on it.
Well, there's a 12-gauge double barrel and a 44-40 Winchester in the cabinet. Take one or both?
I'll take them both. Mr. Montgomery, I think I need to tell you, I don't plan to be here for a very long time.
Oh? Why is that?
After my wife was... After she died, I felt like I needed to get away. Everything back there reminded me of her, and the hurt was just too much. But the time's gonna come when I want to get back and be around my own friends and people.
I understand. Do you have a last name, Pearly?
Do I need one?
No, I guess not. All right, Pearly, you can work for me as long as you want, as long as you keep your nose clean, and as long as Ben is comfortable with you. When the time comes that you feel like you want to go back home, tell me. There will be no hard feelings.
Thanks, Mr. Montgomery. I appreciate your understanding.
Pearly grabbed the two weapons, then walked outside. The coach had been pulled into position, and Pearly put the two guns on the seat, then climbed up. Once up on the seat, he laid the guns down in the footwell, then scooted over to the left side.
At least you got enough sense to know which side of the seat to sit on.
When all of the passengers were on board, Ben clambered up onto the driver's seat, then snapped the long whip over the head of his team.
How come you ain't asked me?
Asked you what?
Ask me how long it's going to be before we get to where we're going.
You're the one driving. All I have to do is just sit here. I figure we'll get there when we get there.
You figure we'll get there when we get there? Hey, yes, sir, Pearly. I think you may just work out all right.
175 miles southwest of Sugarloaf, at a ranch called the Tumbling Q, near the small railroad town of Santa Clara, a meeting was being held. Attending the meeting were all the ranchers whose own spreads lay within a 20-mile radius of the Tumbling Q. The breed of choice for the ranchers was the Texas Longhorn. Most had been running the Longhorn ever since they started ranching. The Longhorn was a hardy breed, a breed that could survive drought and find something to eat where little forage seemed available. Today, the ranchers were complaining bitterly over the fact that the market for Longhorns was dropping. The meeting had been called by Pogue Quentin, the biggest rancher in the county and owner of the Tumbling Q.
It's these damn Herefords.
Peters owned a neighboring ranch.
That's all the slaughterhouses is wanting now, and they ain't willing to pay enough for our cows for us to make any money at all. In fact, the way this is going, by the time it's all said and done, we'll be lucky to hang on to our ranches.
Gillespie nodded toward Quentin, who had been watching and listening to the whole thing. So far, Quentin had said nothing.
Well, Quentin, you called this here meeting, so I figure that means you have an idea or two.
Yeah, Quentin, you said you had a way we could beat this. What do you got in mind?
Gentlemen, the time of the Longhorn has gone. We may as well face facts.
What do you mean by face facts?
I mean, you may as well face facts that if you're running a herd of Longhorns, you ain't gonna be making any money from them. So your best bet is to get rid of them.
Get rid of them? How? If nobody wants them, what are we gonna do? Shoot them?
Oh, the market for Longhorns is dwindling to be sure, but there's still some market there. So it's gonna become a matter of supply and demand. If we control the supply, we can have some input into the demand.
Just how the hell are we supposed to control supply?
My suggestion would be for us to form a corporation. A cattle corporation. We'll join all our ranches and our herds together. We'll be able to control supply that way because we will approach the market as a single supplier.
How would something like that work?
It's really very simple. All we have to do is merge our ranches and our cattle into one large ranch and cattle company.
One large ranch? I don't know about that. Who would own it?
We would all own it. We would each own a share of the company in proportion with what we put into it.
I still don't understand.
All right. Let's say we put all our cattle together, and we come up with 100 head.
I got more than 100 head all by my own self.
I'm using 100 head so I can explain it. Now, if we have 100 head, and you put in 2 cows, Gillespie puts in 6 cows, and Peters puts in 10 cows, you will own 2% of the company. Gillespie will own 6% of the company, and Peters will own 10%.
Who owns the rest?
We all own the rest, according to how many head of cattle we put in. I'll own most of the company, because I have the most cattle.
And you say we're doing that so we can control the market?
Yes.
All right. I'll put my cattle in.
And your ranch.
My ranch? What do you mean, my ranch?
If we're going to make this corporation, then it has to have some substance. Look. We all agree that we're going to have to switch over to Herefords, don't we?
Well, yes, but that's what we need to do.
Can you afford to do that right now?
No.
Don't feel bad about it. Most of us are in the same boat.
No, we ain't. We're all in a rowboat, but you are in a ship, the biggest rancher in the county.
Yes, but compared to some of the other ranchers in the state, the Tumbling Q might be considered small. However, if we joined all our ranches into one ranch, we'd be as big as anyone else.
So you want me to give you my ranch?
No, you won't be giving your ranch to me. You'll be buying into the corporation with your ranch, which will make you part owner. Don't you see? With one big ranch, we'll have enough power to go to any bank in the state and take out a loan for as much money as we need to buy Herefords. I propose that we join all our ranches into one big ranch, with each of us owning a percentage of that ranch. Then we sell the entire herd of Longhorns, use what money we get from that sale, plus what we can borrow on the ranch, and buy Herefords.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
I guess it makes sense. I do have a question, though.
What is your question?
When this is all put together, what percentage will you own?
I've had Laura Gilmore draw up the papers for us. Mr. Gilmore, can you answer Mr. Peters' question?
given the value of the various ranches as appraised by the County Tax Commission, and the number of head of cattle each of you will bring to this enterprise, Mr. Quentin will own 87%.
87%? Isn't that a lot? I mean, if we sell our herd, that means you get 87% of the money we make?
It also means I'm responsible for 87% of the cost of operation. Unless you want to assume a larger percentage of the expenses.
No, I guess you're right.
But that's not the way to look at it, Peters. Remember, the whole idea is that we are partners of the whole. All of you will be part owners of the Tumbling Q Ranch.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Gentlemen, if you'll just sign the paper, we'll be in business.
Gillespie, Peters, and the other three ranchers present signed. But when it came time for Colby to sign, he hesitated.
Are you going to sign or not?
I don't know. I was all right with the idea of joining our herds, but the land, I'm not so good with that. After the war, I come out here from Missouri and started cowboying. I liked the work, and I never worked for a boss that I didn't like. But from the time I first come here, I always had it in my mind to someday own me my own ranch. Well, after a lot of hard work, I finally managed to get my own spread. Oh, it ain't much, I guess, considering the size of some of the other ranches hereabout. But it's mine. Now, if I join up with this corporation you're talking about, it won't be mine anymore. I'll be right back where I started, just another cowhand working someone else's ranch.
That's not true. You won't be an employee of the ranch, you'll be one of the owners. A partner in a ranch that is bigger than anything you've ever dreamed of.
Consider this, Colby. If you don't join, you'll be even smaller compared to what we will be. You'll be squeezed out of business in no time at all.
Listen to what Gillespie's saying, Colby. He's telling you like it is.
James, me and you've been friends ever since you come out here. I think Gillespie is making sense. I don't think you got no other choice but to join up with the rest of us.
Yeah, but what about the men we'd need to work and outfit this lodge? Won't we have to hire a lot more men?
Not really. Because we'll be pulling all our cowboys, so we won't need any more men than what we already have.
I only got two hands working for me, and I'll do as much or more than either of them. Now, I don't mind doing it for my own ranch, but looks like the way this is setting up, I'll wind up working for the company.
But don't forget, you are the company.
Company's got to have a boss, don't it?
Yes, of course. Where would any outfit be without a boss?
Then that means I'll be working for that boss.
And by the way, how do we select the boss?
We'll vote.
Each of us get a vote?
Yes.
Well, in that case, I don't reckon it'll be all that bad.
One vote for each percentage point of the ranch that you own.
Wait a minute. So if I own 6%, I get 6 votes?
Yes.
And you get 87 votes?
Yes.
Then you're the only vote that counts.
If you want to put it that way.
What the hell, Peters? Quentin's the biggest rancher here, and this was his idea. When you think about it, it only makes sense that he be the boss.
I suppose you're right.
Although Colby was holding the pen, he had still not signed the paper. Now, he put the pen down.
James, what are you doing?
I'm sorry. I just can't do it. I worked too hard to get my own ranch. I just can't give it away like this.
Mr. Colby, I have to do what is best for all of us. That means that if you don't join us, you won't be able to survive. You'll have no market for your cattle, and your ranch will be squeezed out. You'll be lucky if you have enough money to buy a ticket back to Missouri.
Yeah? Well, at least I'll be my own boss. Goodbye, gents.
Colby?
Yes?
Don't take this personally. It's pure business.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Gentlemen, we've made good progress here today. I'll start buying Hereford cattle to build our new herd, and to strengthen that herd, I plan to acquire at least one champion Hereford bull. I thank you for your confidence and support.
Smoke Jensen, owner of Sugarloaf Ranch, had come to see Steve Warren, a cattle broker, to arrange a sales contract for his beeves.
I hate to tell you this, Smoke, but it looks like about the best we can come up with is $7 a head.
Did you say $7?
That's what it looks like.
Well, that's not very good. Last year, I got $10 a head. And the year before that, I got $15. What's happening to the market? Are people not eating beef anymore?
Oh, they're still eating beef, all right. but they've gotten a lot more particular. Now, if we're talking Herefords instead of Longhorns, I could offer you $25 a head.
I have a few Herefords, but not enough to sell yet. I'm just beginning to build up a herd.
Smoke, I wish I could offer you more. As you know, I get 10% of the contract, which means the higher price I can get for you, the more money I make for myself. But no matter where you go, Omaha, Kansas City, Chicago, we are running into the same thing. The most any of the meatpacking houses will pay is $7 per head for Longhorn cattle. And if they had a hard winter, they may pay as low as $4 or $5. I've seen your herd. Your beeves are in good shape, so you'll get top dollar. Unfortunately, top dollar is only $7 per head.
You don't have to explain the situation. I've worked with you for a long time, Steve, and I know you're an honest man, doing the best you can. But these cattle cost me $2 a head to raise, and at $50 per cattle car, that means they're costing me $1 a head to ship. That leaves $4 a head. No, counting your fee, it leaves me $3.30 a head. I'll ship 1,200 head. And I'll make just over $4,000. Well, I won't even make that because that doesn't count the salaries I pay my men. I tell you the truth, I'll do well to break even.
If it is any consolation to you, Smoke, this is happening everywhere and to everyone. The folks back east have gotten a taste of Hereford. Nobody wants Longhorn beef anymore. But as always, the final decision is up to you. Do you want to sell at that price?
No, I don't want to. But it doesn't look like I have any choice.
All right, I'll get you a contract. What about the train cars? Do you want me to book them for you as well?
Yes. Oh, and tell Mr. Bidwell I'll be needing the holding pens for a couple of days.
That'll be 30 cents a head.
Right. That means it'll cost me another $360 just to do business. I don't know that this might not work out better if I just paid somebody to take the beeves off my hands. At least I wouldn't have to worry about feeding them and taking care of them.
It's good you can laugh about it.
You get right down to it, Steve. I have to laugh at it. What else can I do?
I guess you have a point there. All right, once I get this all set up, how soon can you get the herd in?
How soon can you get everything set up?
I can send wires back to Omaha, Kansas City, Chicago. I reckon I can have everything set up by tomorrow.
Then I'll bring my herd in tomorrow.
I'll have everything ready for you.
Emil Sinclair was one of four horsemen riding into Big Rock. He and the other three riders stopped just across the street from the biggest store in town. A huge, brightly painted sign that spread across the front of the store read,
Big Rock Mercantile Goods for All Mankind.
Logan Taylor looked at Emil.
Emil, you stay here with the horses. Jason, Stu, you two come with me.
Emil sat on his horse, holding the reins of the other three horses as Taylor, Jason, and Stu walked across the street, then went inside. There were seven people inside, the clerk, who wasn't armed, and six customers, all of whom were women.
Good afternoon, ladies. I'm going to ask all of you to step back into the storeroom for a little while. We're robbing your store.
One of the women put her hand to her mouth. Taylor swung his pistol toward her, pulling the hammer back as he did so.
Lady, if you scream, I'll shoot you. I'll shoot anyone who screams. Now get back into that storeroom like I said.
Sally had asked Smoke to pick up an iron skillet for her while he was in town, so he tied his horse off out front of the mercantile and started inside to carry out the errand. He knew something was wrong as soon as he stepped through the door. He stopped for a moment, every muscle in his body on the alert. He sensed, rather than heard, someone approaching him very quietly from behind. Making a fist, Smoke timed his reaction perfectly, and at exactly the right moment, he whirled around, swinging as he did so. Relieving the unconscious guard of his pistol, Smoke pulled his own gun and started moving quietly through the store. He didn't have to go too far before he saw, reflected in a dresser mirror, Eli Dawes standing with his hands in the air. Dawes was the manager of the store. In the same mirror reflection, Smoke could see two armed men, both of whom had their guns pointed at Dawes.
I know damn well you got more money than this. A store this big? I've been watching you for a couple days now. You do a lot of business here.
If you really have been watching, then you know we make a deposit in the bank every day at 1 o'clock.
You're lying.
No, he isn't lying. There have been times when I would have made the deposit for him.
Who the hell are you?
I'm the man who's going to kill you if you don't drop your gun.
Stu! Stu, where the hell are you?
Stu, would that be the man you left standing guard at the front door? I'm afraid he isn't going to be able to help you. This is the last time I'm going to say it. Drop your gun.
Mister, are you crazy? There are two of us. There's only one of you.
That's all right. I'll kill you first. That will leave just the ugly one there. And he and I will be all even at one-on-one.
You really are crazy, aren't you?
Hello, Smoke. You got here just the right time.
Glad I could help.
Fellas, meet Smoke Jensen. I know you've heard of him.
It's your playboys. Taylor, Jason, what do you do now?
Wait! I ain't no part of this!
Jason! You cowardly son of a bitch!
At the same time Taylor was shouting, he swung his pistol toward Smoke. Smoke swung his pistol toward the one called Jason, but it wasn't necessary. Since he dropped his pistol and put his hands in the air, Jason hadn't made a move.
Are you all right, Eli?
I'm fine.
Take a look at your friend. Is he dead?
Looks to me like you killed him.
Yes, well, I didn't have time not to.
Stu, the robber Smoke had knocked out, was just getting to his feet then. When he saw Taylor dead and Jason with his hands up, he reached toward his empty holster.
Are you looking for this?
Like his brother, Stu put his hands up.
What are you going to do with us?
It's up to you, mister.
Up to us? How?
I'm either going to kill you or take you down to the jail. It's your choice.
You got no right to arrest us. Only a sheriff can do that.
Or a deputy. I made Smoke my deputy a long time ago.
Sheriff Monte Carson, having heard the shooting, had come into the store to see what was going on.
You want to take charge of these fellas, Monte? Sally asked me to pick up an iron skillet for her, and if I forgot it, I'm going to be in trouble.
Then by all means, you'd better find that skillet. You don't want to be in trouble with Sally.
Oh, pick out any skillet you want, Smoke. It's free.
Well, I appreciate that, Eli.
Come along, boys. Got a nice jail cell just waiting for you.
Wait a minute. Where's the other one?
The other one? What other one? Only three of them came in.
Yes, but I saw four of them riding into town. There's another one somewhere.
Wait a minute. You sold all the Longhorns and bought Herefords?
Yes. That was our arrangement, wasn't it?
How much did you get per head?
$2.
$2? I could have gotten $5. I thought the whole purpose of us putting our herds together was to control the market and get more money.
Yes, well, we actually did $6 per head, but we paid our broker $2 per head, and our board voted to keep $2 per head back for capital improvement.
The board voted? When did the board vote? I don't remember any board meeting.
As I represent 87% of the vote, we didn't really need a board meeting. I also bought Herefords.
How many head of Herefords did you buy?
I bought 1,000 head at $25 per head. In addition, I updated the feeder pens in the barn, and I put in a series of sluices and canals to give us a more dependable water supply.
What do you mean, give us a more dependable water supply? Hell, the creek coming through my ranch is all dried up.
It isn't your ranch anymore, remember? You used your ranch to buy into the corporation.
Yeah? Well, I want my ranch back. I want out of this corporation.
All right. As soon as you pay your share of the debt we've accrued, I'll sign your ranch back over to you.
My share of the debt? What is my share of the debt?
Mr. Gilmore, you like to answer Mr. Peters' question?
The gross income of the sale of 3,500 Longhorns came to $20,916.
All right.
The cost of shipping came to $3,486. The holding pen cost $1,040.80. The broker fee was $6,972. Likewise, capital improvement for Tumbling Q Ranch Incorporated was also $6,972. That leaves a net profit of $1,529.20. At 6%, your share of that comes to $91.75.
You mean all I made from this deal we did was $91?
Actually, you have a net loss. Your share of the money we borrowed to buy the Herefords come to $1,500. Minus the $91.75, that leaves you with an obligation of $1,408.25.
What?
I'm glad you came over, Mr. Peters. How soon can I expect that money?
I don't have $1,400.
Well, now, that does present you with a problem, doesn't it? I mean, we all agreed when we entered into this arrangement to share in the profit and to be responsible for the debt in accordance with our ownership percentage.
But there's no profit!
Not yet. We are in the process of building now.
All right. It looks as if I have no choice but to remain in the corporation.
Good. Good. I was hoping you would decide that. How soon can I expect the money?
How soon? How soon does the loan have to be paid back?
It was a short-term loan. It's due by the end of the week.
By the end of the week? That's impossible.
It was the only way we could get that much money that quickly.
I would have never agreed to anything like that.
Like I said, Mr. Peters, as 87% owner, I didn't need your agreement. Now, when can I expect the money?
I don't have that much money. Can't you personally carry me for a little while?
You do understand, don't you, that I'm obligated for 87% of the debt? How much is that, Mr. Gilmore?
That is $21,750.
I'm sure that you realize that $21,000 is an enormous amount of money, and I have to come up with it by tomorrow. I can't carry you beyond tomorrow.
But what am I going to do?
You could sign over your interest in the ranch to me.
You mean just give it to you?
You wouldn't be giving it to me. You'd be selling it to me for $1,500. And I will even let you keep the $91 that was your share from the sale of the cattle.
No, I can't do that.
I'm afraid, Mr. Peters, that you have no choice.
What about the others?
Baker and Gillespie? Unfortunately, they found themselves in the same boat as you. They have already sold their interest back to Mr. Quentin. I suggest you do the same.
This isn't right.
It's business, Mr. Peters. Business is a risk. Sign here.
Peters stared at the piece of paper Gilmore pushed in front of him. Then, after a long moment, affixed his signature.
I will get your $91.
Nope. Mr. Peters has been a good neighbor. I hate it that this has happened to him. Give him $100.
That's a very generous offer, Mr. Quentin.
I just wish it could be more.
Peters took the $100, then left the house without saying another word.
How do you think it went?
That was the last of them. All the land they pledged to the corporation has now accrued to you. And that means that you own everything but Colby's land. And with the redirection of the water that has left him only one small creek, Colby won't be able to hang on to that much longer.
I have to hand it to you, Gilmore. Only a lawyer could make stealing legal.
Oh, but it isn't stealing, Mr. Quentin. It's all quite legal. That's how I earn my 15%.
10 years earlier, down in Texas, Pogue, Quentin, and three other men, Emil, Jason, and Stu Sinclair, had robbed a train. The train robbery netted $500 in cash, but because Quentin had set up the plan, he kept $200 for himself and gave $100 to each of the other three. The other three understood that the money would be divided that way and made no protest over the allocation of the proceeds. What they did not know, however, was the real reason Quentin had held up this particular train. Quentin knew that this train was carrying a bank draft worth $15,000, and that the draft could be negotiated by the bearer. The Sinclair brothers also did not know Quentin's name, since he identified himself only as Joe. When Quentin went to Colorado, he cashed the draft, bought a ranch, then sent back to Wichita for his wife and 11-year-old son. His wife died in the first year, leaving him with the responsibility of raising his son. It was not a responsibility he handled well. Billy Ray Quentin grew up almost like one of the feral cats on the ranch. Without the ameliorating influence of a mother or the concerned discipline of a father, Billy Ray was as wild as an unbroken colt. That night, Emil went back to Big Rock to free his brothers. He crept into the sheriff's office. The deputy was sitting behind his desk with his feet up on the desk, his chair tipped back against the wall. Before the deputy could react in any way, Emil brought his gun down hard on the deputy's head and he fell from the chair onto the floor.
I didn't figure you'd just go off and leave us.
Where are the keys?
In the middle drawer of the desk.
Emil opened the desk, got the key, then unlocked his brother's cell.
Oh, let's go.
Where are we going?
What difference does it make as long as it's away from here?
The next morning, the cattle broker met Smoke as he came in with the first batch of cows.
I have wire confirmation of a contract with the Malone Meat Packing Company in Kansas City for $7 a head.
Thanks, Steve. And when will the cars be here?
Sometime this afternoon.
That's good. At least I won't be eaten up by holding men charges.
Speaking of which, I need to get over there and make certain all the pens are ready.
Smoke!
Smoke saw Sheriff Carson approaching.
Hey, Monty.
Thought I should warn you. My two prisoners escaped last night.
The boys who tried to rob the mercantile?
Yep. Someone came into the jail, knocked Curly out, then let the Sinclair boys out.
Mm. So they did have someone else whip them. I told you I saw four riders coming into town.
Yeah, the other man was Emil.
Emil?
Has to be. Emil, Jason, and Stu Sinclair are brothers. Emil is the one we didn't have.
Never heard of them.
Yeah, they never really made a name for themselves. Though they served time for robbing a train in which the express agent was killed.
If the express agent was killed, why weren't they hanged? Or at least, why aren't they still in prison?
Well, there was a fourth man with them, and they all said he did it. The engineer and fireman corroborated their story.
Was the man I shot the fourth man in the train robbery?
No, the man you shot was named Logan Taylor, and he was in prison when the robbery happened. As a matter of fact, that's where Emil and the others met him. The Sinclair brothers swear they didn't know the name of the man who was with them. They said they met him just before the job, and the only name he gave them was Joe. I think that is probably true, since if they had given his name, they could have shortened their own sentences.
You said Curly was knocked out. How is he?
He's all right, I guess. He has a bump on his head, and it's going to be sore for a while. His biggest problem is from the bawling out I gave him for falling asleep on the job.
Logan Taylor, you say? I don't believe I've heard of him either.
They didn't any of them make much of a name for themselves. Taylor's from Colorado Springs, and I sent a wire to Sheriff Walker this morning telling him what happened here. Anyway, I thought I would tell you about the Sinclair boys escaping just so you could keep an eye open for them. I don't think it'll be dumb enough to try and give you any trouble.
Yeah, I appreciate the information, Monty.
Sally came over to join him.
Hello, Monty.
Hi, Miss Sally. I need to get back to the office. I'll see you later.
All right, thanks for the information.
What was that all about?
Nothing much.
One of the railroad dispatches just told me that you were in a shootout yesterday.
Yeah, I was.
You didn't mention it.
I didn't want to worry you.
Like you didn't want to worry me about getting only $7 per head?
Yeah, like that. Who told you?
The dispatcher said that you got the best contract of anyone who has brought Longhorns through the last several weeks. I was pretty pleased with that, until he said it was only $7.
The dispatcher has a big mouth.
Oh, Smoke, what are we going to do? At these prices, we can barely afford to stay in business.
We'll do whatever it takes.
The next day, Smoke Jensen stood at the window looking out over the gently rolling pasture land of the nearly 100,000 acres that made up his ranch, Sugarloaf. An early morning mist hovered just over the grass, while wisps of low-lying clouds clung to the purple peaks of the Mather's Fork Range. The clouds were a luminescent orange, the light coming from a morning sun that had not yet made its appearance over the mountains to the east.
Have the mountains moved?
What do you mean, have the mountains moved?
I just asked because you seem to have to check them every morning.
No, they're still there.
Picking up a hot pad, Sally opened the oven door and took out a pan of biscuits. As soon as she set the pan down, Smoke reached for one of the biscuits, and she slapped at his hand with the hot pad.
Can't you even wait for breakfast?
Anyway, it's your fault.
My fault? What do you mean, my fault?
Well, you're such a good cook, and the biscuits look and smell too good to pass up. I tell you the truth, Sally, as good a cook as you are, I would have married you even if you were as ugly as a fence post.
What?
Come on, Sally, you know that I think you are prettier than any fence post I've ever seen.
You had better stop while you're ahead, Mr. Smoke Jensen.
Hey, Sally, what would you say if I told you I plan to get rid of all the Longhorns?
You're going to get rid of all of them? I thought we were going to run both Longhorns and Herefords for a while.
Well, why should I? You saw what happened when we shipped this year's beeves. You pointed it out yourself. We barely broke even.
We don't have enough Herefords.
We'll buy more. Plus a champion seed bull. I don't think we have any choice. What do you think?
Smoke, you are the rancher here. I'm just the rancher's wife.
You're just a rancher's wife? That's a hoot. Just a rancher's wife, my hind leg. Sally, you know full well I'm not going to do something like that unless we both agree.
Well, I didn't say I wasn't a smart rancher's wife.
Just then, Cal walked in.
Smoke, I was wondering... Oh, you're about to have breakfast, are you? Maybe I should come back later.
Don't be silly, Cal. I've already set a plate for you. Have a seat at the table.
You already set a plate? How did you know I would be here?
Like I said, Cal, don't be silly.
Well, thank you, Miss Sally. You didn't have to do that, but Oh, sausage, eggs, potatoes, and biscuits. Oh, it does look good.
Sally brought the food to the table and they all sat down.
Now, what is on your mind, Cal?
I beg your pardon?
When you came in, you said you were wondering about something. What is it you're wondering about?
Oh, nothing really. I was just wondering if you heard anything from Pearlie, is all.
Now, Cal, you know that every time we hear from Pearlie, we tell you.
Yes, ma'am, I know. It's just that I miss him.
We all miss him.
Do you reckon he'll be coming back?
I believe he will.
Well, the last we heard of him, he was down New Mexico way, wasn't he?
He was.
Cal, did you know that Smoke is planning to get rid of all the Longhorns and convert the entire herd to Herefords?
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I think that's a great idea.
You do?
Yes, ma'am. Me and Pearlie, sorry, that is, Pearlie and me used to talk about it.
Pearlie and I.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Pearlie and I. The thing is, there don't nobody want Longhorns no more. I heard they ain't paying near nothing for them, which you didn't tell me because it ain't none of my business, but I figure you didn't get much for them Longhorns we drove into town last week.
You are incorrigible.
I'm a what?
Never mind.
You're right about the price we got for the Longhorns. We got practically nothing for them.
Which is why I think it'd be smart to switch over to raising Herefords. Herefords, well, they do real good on grass, and they get bigger than Longhorns, and make more beef, which means you're going to make a lot more money on them. Beef is better tasting, too. Why, you remember that, Miss Sally? When we spit it and cooked that steer last fall, it was a Hereford. And everybody just went on and on about how good it was.
Here now, Cal, you're hurting my feelings. All this time I thought they were just complimenting my cooking. But you are telling me that I had nothing to do with it. It was just because the beef was from a Hereford?
No, I don't mean nothing like that. You know you're the best cook there is.
I'm teasing you, Cal. But you seem to know a lot about Herefords. I must confess that I'm quite impressed.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Like I said, me and... That is, Pearlie and I talked about some when Smoke brought the first ones in. Since that time, I've read a lot about them.
I suppose they are the way to go. But I can't help it. There is just something about Longhorns that I like. To me, they are a Western icon. I think they are a symbol of the West.
Yes, ma'am. Well, there's that to be said about Longhorns. Plus, another thing is they're a tough breed and can near about raise themselves. But I do believe there will be a time when pert near all the ranches will be raising nothing but Herefords, and there won't be no Longhorns.
There won't be any?
Won't be any market for Longhorns.
Sally, why do you waste your time correcting his grammar? You correct one sentence and he murders the next. You're like Don Quixote dueling with windmills.
I can't help it. It is just the schoolteacher in me. Besides, someone has to duel with windmills. Otherwise, the world would be overrun with them.
Dueling with windmills? Who would duel with a windmill? That don't make no sense at all.
It's from a story about the fella named Don Quixote, who went around dueling with windmills.
A Mexican fella, was he?
No, it's...
Oh, now this I want to hear. You explaining a novel that is farcical, but also serious and philosophical, about the theme of deception?
I guess you're right, Cal. It's just an expression, that's all. It means wasting your time.
Oh, sort of like bailing water with a sieve.
You might say that.
Well, then, why didn't you?
I guess I didn't think of it. Tell me, Cal, with all the reading you've done about Herefords, is it your opinion that it would be worth investing in a champion bull?
Oh, do you mean like a Prince Henry?
That's exactly what I mean. From what I hear, Prince Henry is a true champion.
Oh, he damn sure is. Oh, I'm sorry about the language, Miss Sally.
Oh, don't be silly. I've heard much worse. You know about Prince Henry, do you?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I looked him up and read all about him. He's a direct descendant of one of the 17.
One of the 17?
Henry Clay was the first to bring Herefords to America. He brung 17 of them over. Prince Henry was a direct descendant from one of them. Those bulls. He would be a great bull for us. Oh, I don't mean anything by saying us. I mean he'd be a great bull for the Sugarloaf.
Of course you mean us, Cal. You are part of Sugarloaf, and you know it.
Oh, yes, ma'am. You and Smoke have sure made Pearlie and me feel like that. Are you going to buy Prince Henry?
I'll buy him if he isn't too expensive. The problem is, some people get so caught up in the idea of a bull being a champion that they think he's worth more than he really is. I mean, when you get right down to it, all we really need is a bull who has an eye for the ladies, right?
Oh, an eye for the ladies. He sure needs to have an eye for the ladies, all right.
Where do you find this handsome fellow, Prince Henry?
He's in Colorado Springs. The auction is 2 days from now. I thought I would take the evening train, and that would put me into Colorado Springs first thing in the morning, and leave me a couple of days to look him over. I would also get to see who else might be bidding on him.
Good idea. That way, you might also get an idea as to how much you are going to have to spend.
And if there are several others interested in him, then it'll tell me for sure that the new era of cattle breeding is coming. That would be good to know, because I sure don't want to be caught a day late and a dollar short.
You're leaving this evening?
Yes. Cal, can you ride into town with me, then bring my horse back?
All right.
No need. I'll take you into town in the buckboard.
Well, I'd still like to go into town with you. That is, if you don't mind, Miss Sally.
I don't mind.
Well, I don't have to go to Colorado Springs alone, you know. Colorado Springs is a nice place to visit. You might enjoy coming along with me.
I'll just pack a few things. What is it?
It didn't take much to convince you to go with me, did it?
You were just being nice, weren't you? You didn't really expect me to go.
To be honest, no. I didn't think you would want to go. But I wasn't just being nice. Glad you decided you would.
During the drive into town that afternoon, they talked about what would be required in order to convert the herd to all Herefords. One of the first things to do would be to sell off all the remaining Longhorns.
If everyone is selling off their Longhorns at the same time, that's going to have the effect of even further depressing the market for them.
I know.
I mean, we just barely broke even with what we did sell. We'll take a loss by selling all the rest of them.
It could be worse. You do remember the big freeze-out, don't you? We lost thousands of cattle that year, with no compensation at all.
Yes, I remember that.
You want to have dinner at Lewis's?
Sure. Only let's stop by the post office first.
After picking up their mail at the post office, Smoke, Sally, and Cal stepped into Longmont's.
Smoke, mon cher ami. How wonderful of you to grace my establishment with your beautiful young lady.
Lewis, you make me blush.
Blushing becomes you, my dear. Oh, whatever you have for dinner, you must save room for my tarte française de soir.
Oh, that sounds lovely. I shall look forward to it.
What is, whatever that is he said.
It's French silk pie. Don't worry. Knowing you, you will like it.
Well, I like any kind of pie.
Mon jeune ami, this isn't just any kind of pie.
A few minutes later, Lewis served them personally.
Rôti de bœuf avec les pommes de terre. Bon appétit.
That just looks like roast beef to me. I mean, don't get me wrong, it looks like good roast beef, but it don't look like whatever you said it was.
This is Hereford. I think you'll find it a bit more tender than what you're used to.
See what I'm talking about, Sally? Even Lewis is switching over to Hereford's.
After their meal, Smoke began looking through the mail they had picked up at the post office. He smiled as he held one of the letters up.
Ah, it's from Pearlie.
Read it aloud.
Okay. Dear Smoke, Sally, and Cal, I take pen in hand to pass on to all of you my regards, and to tell you that my thoughts are often of Sugarloaf and the many fine times we have had together. I am still in the New Mexico Territory, where I have taken a job as shotgun guard for the Sunset Stagecoach Company. I have thought much about Lucy, and I have wondered how I would be if she had not been killed. But it is not good to think much about such things. I am glad that you are a justice of the peace, and that you were able to marry us. I know that our getting married made Lucy very happy. And when I think about it now, I am happy about it too. Tell Cal I am taking very good care of his silver hat band, and I promise that one day soon I will bring it back to him. Your friend, Pearlie.
Did you hear that? He said one day soon he would come back.
He certainly did.
I wonder how soon is soon.
Half an hour later, after having eaten Louis Longmont's French silk pie, Cal had two pieces, the three drove in the buckboard down to the depot that served the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad. They reached the depot just as the train was pulling into the station.
Now I call that good timing.
Smoke, I want you to promise me something.
Oh, I'll promise you anything, my love. You know that.
Let's not go overboard when bidding for that bull. I think we should give ourselves a limit.
I've already taken care of that. I'm only taking $750. That's as high as I'll be able to go.
Good. If you think having a champion bull is important, I hope we can buy him. But if we can't, then I'm sure we can find another bull who... How was it you put it? Has an eye for the ladies?
Cal, I'm counting on you to look out for things while I'm gone.
Well, I will, Smoke. Don't you worry none about it. I will. You two have a good time in Colorado Springs and bring back that bull.
I'll bring him back.
If he doesn't cost too much.
If he doesn't cost too much.
Smoke and Sally walked across the wooden depot platform, then stepped up into the train. Once in the car, they sat down on the depot side of the train with Sally taking the window seat. As the train pulled out of the station, Sally waved at Cal, who sat in the buckboard watching them leave. Smiling broadly, Cal waved back.